You're listening to Agriculture Today.
U.S. farm income expected to be slightly lower this year, but the picture more mixed than the headline numbers suggest. Economists with USDA say higher government payments and steady expenses helping cushion another year of market pressure. Net farm income forecast $153.4 billion, down less than 1% from 2025. Net cash farm income, better reflecting money moving through farm accounts, actually projected to rise to $158.5 billion after adjusting for inflation. Both measures remain above long-term averages. Now the drag comes from cash receipts. Total farm receipts expected to fall to $514.7 billion. It's driven largely by weaker livestock, dairy, and egg prices. Crop receipts showing a modest nominal increase, led by corn, though gains fade after inflation. Government payments are projected to rise sharply to $44.3 billion, driven by higher commodity program payments and continued disaster assistance, and production expenses forecast to stay relatively flat. Higher livestock purchases and labor costs offset by lower feed and energy spending. Lower ocean freight rates in 2025 quietly improved the competitiveness of U.S. grain exports, offering some relief to producers facing weak commodity prices. Even with late-year volatility, shipping costs averaging below recent years, helping keep export channels open. Average bulk ocean freight rates for wheat, corn, and soybeans declined from the 2024 levels and the prior four-year average. Rates from the U.S. Gulf to Japan averaging $50.83 per metric ton, while the Pacific Northwest routes averaging 82.09, narrowing delivered cost pressure for overseas buyers. Seasonal slowdowns, ample vessel supply, and normalized Panama Canal operations weighing on rates early in the year, although rates firmed during the second half. Looking ahead, freight rates remain moderate, but shifts in global demand or vessel availability could alter export competitiveness later this year. That's according to analysis from USDA. And federal assistance has helped blunt recent farm losses, but it does not come close to making producers whole. After several years of rising input cost, followed by sharply lower commodity prices, many farmers remain deeply in the red, despite multiple rounds of government aid. From 2023 through 2025, average corn, soybean, and wheat producers accumulated roughly $300 per acre in losses, while cotton losses approached $1,000 per acre. Higher prices tied to global disruptions helped earlier in the decade, but that support fading as markets turned lower in 2023. Traditional safety net programs did provide limited relief early in the downturn because reference prices were outdated. More meaningful support, though, is coming for the 2025 crop year, but most of that aid doesn't arrive till later this year. In the meantime, Congress and USDA adding emergency and bridge assistance. It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
A lot to be proud of.
Randy Block is CEO of Cattle Facts.
I've been blessed to be part of the industry. This is my 45th year at Cattle Facts, so I've seen some of those ugly, ugly days back in the 80s and early 90s where beef demand was cut in half between 1980 and 1998. We wondered, how are we ever going to get out of this mess? And to see the complete opposite of that today, with demand at a 40-year high, 17 straight years of continued growth in beef demand, prices, more importantly, profitability at record high levels. And again, my main message to producers, we shouldn't have to apologize for this, and don't apologize for this, because this has taken a ton of hard work, sweat for the industry, a lot of the decision makers that were out here and saying, hey, this is what we've got to do to change the course of this industry. We've got to focus on quality. We got to give consumers what they want when they want it. And if we do that, the needle will start to move in our direction, and that we're in the absolute best of that that we could have ever expected today.
When it comes to grading, we've actually upped the game. More prime and choice over select.
We really have, and that was a decided decision by the industry back in the days when we first saw the checkoff go into work and the industry started to do the benchmarking work. We found that, hey, early on, two out of every four steaks was a bad eating experience. And even as early as the late 1990s, one out of every four steaks was an unsatisfactory eating experience. So the industry had to change that. And there was no wonder consumers weren't picking beef. It just wasn't consistent. They couldn't count on it. It was tough, whatever the case may be. And that really goes back. Were we putting enough marbling in it to keep it juicy and flavorful? When we focused on doing that, that's when things really started to move in our favor, and it's just accelerated. I mean, when I look at what's happened from 2000 to 2025, it's really pretty fascinating to see this level of demand growth. For your listeners out there, again, just to give you a perspective, the inflation rate on an annual basis has been 2.5% since 1998 to 2000. 2.5% inflation on an annual basis over that 25-year time period. The price of beef has gone up at 4.6%. That's 2% real demand growth. And that's why we're enjoying the price levels we are today. For decades, we went in here that prices weren't keeping pace with inflation. That's when we get ourselves in a trick and the industry loses money. In the 80s and 90s, when we lost 50% of the demand in our industry, we lost 12% of all people in agriculture. We lost 400,000 beef producers in that time period. So those are times that none of us want to relive again.
And beef on Dairy Cross?
We think we're utilizing a million more dairy cattle than what we have any time in the history of our industry. So they've actually been a little bit of a hedge in here to where we won't see maybe as big a swings in here in these inventory numbers. And they're bringing a tremendous quality carcass to the table day in and day out. So again, the industry's changed quite a little bit, Stephen, in the last 10 to 12 years, but I think that's been a positive change for our industry.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
This has been Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
with Agriculture Today. Here's Tony St. James.
Early, sir, in your tenure as Treasury Secretary, you said, and you touched on it here today, and I quote, "For the last four decades, Wall Street has grown wealthier than ever before, and it can continue to grow and do well. But for the next 4 years, it's Main Street's turn."
Missouri Representative Ann Wagner at a House Financial Services Committee hearing with Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent.
It's Main Street's turn to hire workers. It's Main Street's turn to drive investment. And it's Main Street's turn to restore the American dream. And as chair of the Capital Markets Committee, I could not agree more, sir. For too long, outdated securities laws have limited everyday Americans' ability to invest in innovative startups. At the same time, the number of companies listed on public markets continues to shrink. And as a result, everyday Americans in Missouri's second congressional district that I have the honor to represent have fewer opportunities to invest toward major life goals, including owning a home, paying for their children's education, or securing a dignified retirement. Main Street businesses across the Midwest and other regions of our country are overlooked, as venture funding and capital raising opportunities remain largely concentrated on the coast. That is why I have made it a priority to facilitate capital formation and empower entrepreneurs and small businesses across America. Just weeks ago, Mr. Secretary, December 11th, to be exact, the House passed my Invest Act, a bipartisan package of 22 bills focused on three goals: expanding access to capital for small businesses, increasing opportunities for everyday investors, and strengthening our public markets. Capital formation is the lifeblood of American economic growth and prosperity. Our capital markets are indeed the deepest and most liquid in the world, and the Invest Act will ensure that they remain among the greatest strengths for decades to come. I look forward to continuing to work with you and the administration to advance these priorities and unleash the power of our capital markets. Secretary Bessent, in your view, what are the largest barriers to capital formation for small business?
Congresswoman, I look forward to working with you. And I think I would bifurcate that. Most small businesses are individuals. And
Correct. For
many individuals, we have learned that most of them, 38% of Americans, do not own equities. So with the Trump accounts, which will give every child $1,000 seed finance, every American, they will be invested in a low-cost index fund, every American will have a share of our great innovative economy. For small businesses, it is often, I would say, it is a duality of regulatory and access to finance. Americans are entrepreneurial. We want to get out and form businesses. And I believe that with the confidence of being able to do that, and what President Trump's agenda has done, businesses now have tax certainty with a one big beautiful bill, that 100% deductibility of equipment, of factories, and of ag structures. We have energy certainty with our energy dominance, and we have regulatory certainty as we are pulling back the regulatory morass that was highly, highly harmful to both small and large business.
It's Agriculture Today.
When it comes to ag chemical application, make sure your equipment delivers. For years, growers and custom commercial applicators alike have depended on Wiley sprayers and Case IH application equipment from Wiley Implement and Spray Center. Wiley offers new and used self-propelled sprayers, as well as our own line of pull-type sprayers for any size operation. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
But what we're seeing behind the scenes, what our people on the ground in China are feeding to us about what's happening there, that has changed my perspective on where this might go.
Arlen Suderman with StoneX.
When I first saw President Trump's social media post on Wednesday, I thought, no, it isn't going to happen. They're not going to buy 8 million metric tons. That's not practical. It's not feasible. We don't have 8 million metric tons to send to them with a strong biofuel program we anticipate having. It's just more Trump rhetoric. It's not going to happen. But now, as I learn more about what's happening in China, I have to respect the possibility that it may happen. And that goes back to a couple of things. First of all, President Trump posted that after getting off a lengthy phone conversation that he had had with President Xi of China. Now, President Xi has not acknowledged the 8 million metric tons, but then again, he didn't acknowledge the 12 million metric tons on October 30th, but they still bought them, so I have to respect that possibility. But now we learn, based on what we see in state media in China, that just several hours before talking to President Trump, he talked to Vladimir Putin of Russia in a video call. And they talked about many of the same topics. And really, it seems like President Xi is trying to bring peace to the world, so to speak. And I'm thinking, okay, we know that he's in trouble at home because of the purge that he's conducting in the military. Anyone he thinks may not be loyal to him, he's having arrested on corruption charges, quote unquote. And so there's obviously some sense that his support base is shaken in China because of the weakness of the economic problems there, et cetera. And the United States is one of the primary causes of those economic problems right now. And then right after that, basically, China released its official annual document called the number one document, which is the blueprint for the Rural and Agricultural Production Task for the year. Now, there's something very important in that document. Within that document, it's worth noting that there is a shift in tone from years of emphasizing self-sufficiency to minimize imports, particularly from the United States, to now stating putting on equal importance, self-sufficiency is equally important to participating in agricultural trade and expanding imports of products in short domestic supply situations. After that was released, a senior official commented that farm product imports are essential to protect national food security. That represents a major policy shift within China, which is believed that will lead to broader Chinese imports of agricultural products. And our people on the ground in China think, especially from the United States. So basically what we see unfolding is President Xi needs peace with Trump so he can rebuild his support base, focus on his domestic problems that he has to rebuild his support base there over the coming year if he wants to have another term in office. And if I think that he'll offer to buy other ag commodities, because he doesn't have room for 8 million metric tons in the reserve, and the crushers have zero incentive to buy our soybeans when they're at least 70, 80 cents more expensive delivered than what Brazilian beans are. So the state grain buyer would have to buy it for the reserve. They don't have room in that reserve. So I think he'll counteroffer with opportunities to buy other ag commodities. But if Trump sticks his guns on the soybeans, he may actually do that for that reason. We'll see how this plays out.
It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
You've said that the current deposit insurance framework is a vulnerability for the banking system, that there is a competitive imbalance that favors large banks, and that this increases the risk of bank runs and erodes depositor confidence.
At a recent House Financial Services Committee hearing, where Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent testifying in front of the former chairman of the House Ag Committee, Oklahoma Representative Frank Lucas.
Can you talk more about a targeted expansion of deposit insurance for non-interest-bearing transaction accounts? And would that strengthen financial stability within the system?
Congressman Lucas, thank you for that very important question, because it is my belief that because there is the belief that big banks, the depositors, will not lose money. During a financial crisis, as we saw in 2023, assets leave small banks. And much of that is what is known as the payroll account. So I think it is very important for small banks to have one non-interest-bearing account that can have a much higher level of insurance so that they are able to retain deposits during a stress period. This is one of the reasons that we have seen assets leave small banks. It is one of the reasons that we have seen 50% of small banks disappear.
Continuing along this line of inquiry, Mr. Secretary, a robust banking system with healthy banks of all sizes reduces systematic risk across the entire system. Why is it important that Congress act now on targeted deposit insurance reform, not only for Main Street, but also our financial stability?
Again, deposit volatility, which is what you're referring to, is deposits moving during a stress time, does not benefit anyone in the long run.
And one more question on this perspective. Congress should look at giving FDIC authority to raise the coverage level for non-interest-bearing transaction accounts to an appropriate amount that is data-driven and puts smaller institutions on a level playing field with larger banks. How would our banking system be safer with a narrow, targeted expansion, such as the one I've suggested?
Again, it would permit the small and community banks to continue competing. It would get credit to our Main Street, and it would stem deposit flight during a period of stress, which is one of the biggest threats to financial stability.
Focusing on a slightly different subject, sometimes something I've focused on as chairman of the Task Force on Treasury Monetary Resilience has been strengthening market stability and liquidity. We saw occasional bouts of Treasury market volatility last year. How would reforms to banking regulations like the liquidity coverage ratio and stress tests incentivize market intermediation for banks and improve market stability?
Again, Congressman, wonderful question, that it brings more of our Treasury market onshore. And as you said, there were periods of stress last year. The market successfully navigated those. At the end of January, we had the third highest volume in the Treasury market, and the bid-ask spreads, very important for the financial well-being of the American people who are invested in money market funds, in bond funds, in their retirement funds. They have stayed right in the center line, and we are at a five-year low in bond market volatility.
That was a civil exchange. You also had this with Representative Al Green of Texas.
No, Congressman. The OCC is an independent entity, and I would know, Congressman,
I take that as a no.
You traveled to Venezuela
I take that as a no. Do not want to answer that question. I take that as a no.
It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
You think about the genetics that we've bred into these animals.
Randy Block is CEO of Cattle Facts.
I thought Kevin Good shared some data this morning that was phenomenal. You think about the genetics out here that we can take these cattle to the endpoints that we are today. I mean, in the last 2 years, we've added 52 pounds of carcass weight. Well, along with that 52 pounds, we've added more quality grade, haven't we? But that 52 pounds in carcass weight's been the equivalent of harvesting 2 million more cattle on an annual basis. So it's not like with that it's a one for one. When you go through these ups and downs, the market has sent a signal that it wanted more beef. Well, we're producing more beef with fewer carcasses. That trend hasn't changed. I don't think it's going to change as we look to the future.
Obviously, these are good times for cow-calf producers, but what does Block suggest?
Well, I would say, first of all, make sure we got the debt paid down. This is an opportunity. We ought to be getting our financial houses in order. Get the debt paid down, and if we look at our industry out here, the key thing I think we need to do is understand, as you said, these markets can come down. They have had some added boosts because of some of the things that the government has had to do. You know, their responsibility is to keep our nation's beef cow herd safe. And the Secretary of Ag has done that. She's done exactly what she needed to do to close the Mexican border. Not everybody is in favor of that. But again, number one, we have to keep our cattle and wildlife herds safe. So when we do feel like we've got enough tools in our toolbox that border can reopen and we'd see renewed imports of Mexican cattle come into the U.S., whenever that is, whether that's in 26 or 27, none of us really know. We just want to make sure that we've got the tools that we can keep the screwworm from driving north. We need to be able to drive it all the way back through Mexico, all the way out of Central America, and finally be rid of the pest.
And finally, what's ahead for the industry?
Well, I think we still have some tremendous opportunities to continue growing demand domestically, more differentiation. The best thing we ever did as an industry is creating more and more differentiated products. Instead of just producing beef, putting it out here and say, here you go, you'll like it. All these different branded programs that we have, the differentiated market, if they want grass-fed, they can get it. If they want grain-fed, if they want organic, whatever it is, we can produce that for consumers. Wherever they are, we can meet them there. And I think our industry's done a wonderful job of filling all those niches, which has created more demand. I think that by itself has brought more people back to our industry. The quality of product we're producing, phenomenal, but there's still more opportunity to make it better. And we have to remember we only have 3 to 4% of the world's population in the U.S. So 96% of the consumers around the world, not that all of them are beef eaters, but there are a whole lot of them that are. Those are opportunities for us. The U.S. Meat Export Federation is done an incredible job of helping us reach those consumers, turn them on to the differentiation of U.S. beef, and I think they'll continue to bring more and more consumers to our tables before it's all said and done.
It's Agriculture Today.
You hear that? That's the sound of forever, because there's nowhere else you'd rather spend forever than on land like this. Tending a herd, growing crops, raising a family. At Capital Farm Credit, we thrive at helping the next generation of farmers and ranchers like yourself by providing advice, products, and opportunities to help you build a life on the land you love most. To learn more, visit CapitalFarmCredit.com. Capital Farm Credit. Together, we're better.
When it comes to ag chemical application, make sure your equipment delivers. For years, growers and custom commercial applicators alike have depended on Wiley sprayers and Case IH application equipment from Wiley Implement and Spray Center. Wiley offers new and used self-propelled sprayers, as well as our own line of pull-type sprayers for any size operation. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.